You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Blue Wire.
Hey, listeners. It's your host, Sarah Todd here. Before we get into this episode of Unsalvageable, I wanted to apologize for the delay in it coming out and not having an episode out in a while. Life happens. And I know that some of the info on this will seem a little bit outdated because it was recorded more than a week ago, but it's still a great conversation with Bleacher Report's Dan Favalli, and I really want you guys to hear it. Greg and I will be back on track recording regularly this week. I hope you guys enjoy the show. Well, okay, so this is not going to be recorded. This is off the record.
But, sure.
Off the record, but on the recording. That's a flex. You trust your editing skills.
She edits the podcast herself. So.
Yeah. Are you guys ready?
As I'm going to be.
I'm ready.
Great. 3, 2, 1. Hello, hello, and welcome to Unsalvageable, a Utah Jazz podcast, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network, with me, Sarah Todd, jazz beat reporter for the Deseret News, and as always, my co-host, Greg Foster. Greg, we have a very, very special guest today, so let's waste no time. Get him in here.
He's way more important than I am, so.
More important than you, just below Victor. That's what we'll say. It's Dan Favalli. He's from Bleacher Report. He covers the NBA. He's the Hardwood Knox podcast host with Adam Frommel. And you guys should be following him. If you're not following him, great follow. Does great stuff over at Bleacher Report. Dan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the low bar for special guests. That's my bread and butter.
We have nothing but low bars here at Unsalvageable.
That's
I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah. we barely just make par every week, and sometimes not even that.
That's my kind of podcast. That's the mantra we live by at Hardwood Knox. So this is perfect.
Just before recording, news broke that Joe Ingles has entered the health and safety protocol, and so we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Joe Ingles being the Jazz's first player to enter health and safety protocol. They were the last holdout of the league after I think more than 200 players and coaches and staff had entered the health and safety protocol. The Jazz were the last. I think that's probably going to change when they test to go into Canada here in a couple of days. So it was bound to happen, but here we are. And it's old Joe that did it.
COVID-19.
So the assumption is just going to be that there is going to be a bunch of positive tests before they're heading into Canada.
I have personal distrust in some of the rapid tests because basically every single person that I know in my life that has had COVID tested negative on a rapid test before then testing positive on a PCR. And so I'm just very wary of those now.
I'm getting a PCR test tomorrow. I tested negative, but I feel like dog so, you know, better safe than sorry.
Wasn't there something going around? Hopefully this isn't disinformation by accident, but that like the at-home tests or the quick tests aren't necessarily suitable for the Omicron variant to detect it, which would be
kind of sort of a big deal,
given how much
it would be a very big deal. Oh, I hope that this is just fake news on Unsalvageable.
I don't know where I saw that. Maybe I was told. See, I'm already, this was bad.
Fake news Todd strikes again. I'm famous for that. I mean, I guess that the Jazz are lucky in the sense that once they start getting players into health and safety protocol, that they're the team that gets it basically when the protocol has been shortened. And so hopefully if they stay asymptomatic and they're able to kind of get over the Omicron variant, which seems to be leaving people's system faster, then it won't affect them maybe as much as it affected other teams. That's probably going to piss off other teams. I mentioned that earlier in the season, that as these rules evolve throughout the season, other teams are probably going to get upset, you know, right, with games being postponed and the hardship contracts and how that's all going to evolve. It's bound to piss someone off. Draymond's already pissed. So
when is Draymond happy though?
Oh, actually, wholesome content on Christmas Day. Christmas Eve, they were flying, I think, to Phoenix because they played in, is that correct? Was that the Christmas Day game? Yeah. And he did an interview after the game, and he said that they were flying out Christmas Eve. They'd just done Christmas at home with the family, and he was helping his kid like put together some sort of like Fisher Price toy that he'd gotten or something. And as he was about to leave, his son started crying. And so he calls Steve Kerr, and he's like, I can't leave the kid. He's sobbing on Christmas. Like, and he's like, is there a spot on the plane? And Steve Kerr was like, yeah, bring him. He can go to Phoenix. Don't worry about it. So that made Draymond happy. Wholesome content.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
That's great. But if he has a problem with like the league's actual setup, there's a players union that he could go to. I'm still amazed at how the whole thing is just, I have only complaints and no solutions, but I do think a lot of people seem more concerned about like the players' safety and everything that's happening than the actual players do. And like the hardship exceptions for me, they're so cringe because they're like these glorified temp workers who don't have the same level of, like, people have spun it as, look at this opportunity, but you're like riding the back of these glorified temp workers to keep the league going. And that's my bigger issue more than like any competitive advantage.
They're basketball Uber drivers.
And the weird thing is, yeah, the whole like look at the opportunity they're getting, sure, maybe in 1% of all of the hardship contracts it's actually going to turn into something from one of these guys, but the other ones, like, I mean, I bet you if behind closed doors and off of a microphone, if you asked any of these head coaches while they're sitting at home and having their second or third assistant coach a team that's basically G League call-ups and hardship players, they're not looking at the opportunity. They're like, yeah, our team is not getting prepared for the postseason.
Yeah. It's wild. Like, teams are being forced to basically just like punt large chunks of their season. Like, look what's going on in Minnesota right now. And like the Nets went through it and the Cavaliers have gone through it. And like, just this cavalcade, this laundry list of teams that are just like, sucks to suck. Yeah. I don't know. It's like, it's mind-boggling to me. And I understand why, like, the show must go on. You're not just going to shut things down. You got to make that money. You got to fill up seats, but it's mind-boggling to me that like, we can't look at the like overall landscape of this and be like, I don't know, maybe we hit the pause button for a minute and let people get healthy, especially when like the NBA just a few seasons ago set the precedent on how to deal and how to play with this virus. Like, it's such a startling contrast from where they started to where they're at now. And like, I don't know where we go, but it just seems so incredibly unfair is ultimately what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And I don't even think a shutdown would do anything. I think if anything, it would have made things worse, because what do they think these players are going to do if they're away from the team? And so I don't know that there's an answer, but I do think it took the fact that like the extra testing wasn't in place already.
Right.
And then it was just conveniently scheduled for after Christmas. It felt like that should have been in place from the get-go, and they probably should have. I don't want people to be isolated. I wouldn't be in, you know, if I'm a player, no, I wouldn't be in favor of another bubble, but there probably should be, whether you're vaccinated or not, like more restrictions when you're on the road or something to try and prevent this. And just, I didn't even know. I just assumed that testing was at a comparative level to where it was last season until that Woj report came out a few weeks ago. And it's like, what are we doing here? If you're trying to, I get you need to operate amid this and that a shutdown doesn't fix anything, but why was it just, oh, COVID's in the rear view, basically? There are so many puzzling things that the NBA has done. I think they could have handled a lot of stuff better, even as they were trying to go about business as usual.
Yeah, I think, Dan, I'm with you in that I have a lot of complaints and no solutions at all. Like, I have no answers for what the league should do. It just feels like, I mean, it, honestly, it just feels like societal failure has set a nice precedent for the NBA.
And we love it, folks.
That's like, what they bank on at this point, though, right? They fancy themselves like this self-aware bastion of professional sports, but they're able to get away with so much because at the end of the day, you say, oh, it's a business. They're going to act like a business. And I do think it's fair, though, if the NBA wants to be like the capital of woke in professional sports, to hold them to a higher standard that they have failed to meet a bunch throughout this. But I also think the more realistic thing is we just have to view it as, oh, they actually are a business, and they're only the stuff that they've done where it makes them seem self-aware, liberal, whatever, progressive, however you want to see it. It's been very much born from convenience or just a lot of empty-handed gestures. So I'm still surprised that people get surprised when the NBA acts the way it does, but I'm also like, the NBA has tried to peddle itself as one thing, so it should be fair to hold them to a higher standard. I just don't think they are the entity that so many people think they are when it comes to looking at just like progressive stances and actual care beyond the bottom line of the league.
You know, yeah, and the bottom line is capital.
Yeah. Right. I'm a little confused that like putting group economics on the back of a jersey didn't work.
Educational reform was the most powerful one, clearly.
The performative nature of the league in a moment where it had a chance to do something incredibly like substantial and actually strike and take money out of the pockets of billionaires and like make a real dent, and then for them to instead have things like educational reform on a jersey, I'm never gonna forget that.
I will say it probably did spare us. Had they made any real gesture or like the players been on strike or anything, I would have shuddered to have had Kyle Kuzma's Twitter show up in my timeline had that actually happened. So at least we evaded that. If I'm going to be the rose-colored optimist here.
Okay.
We love a silver lining.
The last thing that I want to do is even get near a conversation where I have to like tear my hair out talking about Kyle Kuzma. And so I'm going to switch gears.
I will say it's a pretty neck and neck race between him and Andrew Bogut for just like the dumbest to graduate from my college.
Oh, from your alma mater. That's rough.
Yeah. University of Utah, folks, that education is paying off.
I had to finally unfollow Andrew Bogut. It got to be too much.
You mean Andrew Bigot?
I was able to unfollow him basically almost, I don't think it was as soon as he retired, but if they're no longer in the NBA, I don't feel an obligation to follow them anymore.
Yeah, I think it was his InfoWars appearance.
Oh, man.
Just really, really tough stuff from one of the original Bogies.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You know what, Greg? There was a second piece of news, but I think that we'll just mention that we know about it. Hold off on it because I don't think that Dan really wants to talk about Mieyoni. But Mieyoni, no longer a member of the Utah Jazz. He's the first casualty of the impending trade deadline. He is sent to basketball purgatory over in Oklahoma City, where he becomes a true asset in the most truest sense of that word. Well wishes for him in his rap career.
I will say, though, I'm very excited for cash considerations for the Jazz. I mean, that guy has been around the league. He's a veteran and has proven his worth time and time again. So
wait, can we celebrate the luxury tax savings here? They saved like $3 million.
Yeah.
$4 million off their luxury tax bill.
$3 million to Ryan Qualtrics Smith. What is that?
Apparently it's important. It is fascinating that they made this move now because it's two open roster spots, which does make me think, like, are they going to futz and fiddle with weird signings from here on out? Or are they preparing to do something bigger at the trade deadline? Because they're super interested. Just that move to me, not the move itself, but like clearing that roster spot is, I don't know. It makes me think like, oh, are they actually going to do something here? But I guess they do have also the king of almost is also employed by this organization now. So maybe we'll hear a lot of what the Jazz could have done and then didn't leading into the trade deadline.
The second roster spot is absolutely the most interesting part of this because, and listen, I'll just say, Mie is a great kid and I love him. He's always been very nice to me and I do wish him well in his rap career. So
he might actually get to play too, because they didn't waive him. So
yeah,
OKC just has minutes to go around. So maybe he'll get
offensive boards.
Presti has to be pissed that they're not worse. Like they've won real games. So he's got to be like getting ready to shut down Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the rest of the year or something.
I mean, they're already limiting Lou Dort's minutes.
Yeah, like this guy tries too hard on defense.
Yeah, he's too good. We can't have this.
That's the worst part.
How do we clone Derek Favors is ultimately what I'm saying.
That's the worst part for me is like the best part of going to Oklahoma City would be to like learn from Lou Dort and Lou Dort being like them being worried about Lou Dort actually winning games for them. He just limits what Mie is going to be able to learn. Poor Mie.
Well, maybe Lou Dort just be his coach from the sidelines. Maybe it actually helps him out a little bit.
Dude, I love Lou Dort so
much. Hashtag free Lou Dort.
I can't remember who. I think it might have been David Brandon on Twitter described Lou Dort as a Mack truck made up of a bunch of smaller Mack trucks. And I just can't get that image or descriptor out of my head because it feels so spot on.
That well, is Hemingway-esque.
Here on Salvageable, we subscribe to the belief that a thick and jacked basketball player is the best kind of basketball player. And Lou Dort is at the top of the list of a thick and jacked player.
He's a perennial thick Jack King.
Yeah, thick Jack King. We stand a thick Jack King.
He's right up there with Semi Ojeleye and RIP to Jarrell Brantley, who's now playing in Russia. Like, yeah, I mean, there so is
Jazz,
not.
They need a thick jacked player then.
I mean, yeah, it's going to be great when they trade for Marcus Smart. It's going to happen and they're going to win the title and we're all going to celebrate and get beers afterwards.
That's the thing is that second roster spot leads me to believe that, you know, the rumors that we're hearing about what the Jazz are willing to dangle out there to try to bring in a wing defender is not just all talk. And, you know, just where there's smoke, there is fire. And so I think that they are bound to make a pretty substantial move. And I mean, substantial kind of. The Jazz haven't made a ton of substantial moves in the last few years. I mean, they bring in Bojan, they bring in Mike Conley, but those all came at like very low risk moves. Like they didn't have to really give up anything. They gave up Derek Favors, but like he was already washed by the time that they did that. And so I think that we're about to see somebody actually get moved.
Big, big watch this space energy.
I also wondered if it was like, I just couldn't identify a player that a team would be willing to give away. They still have, don't they have like $7.5 million left on the Favors trade exception? So that extra roster spot helps them out in that scenario. But those trades are just like, all these trade exceptions are created and used, but they're also always like the moves include actual other players. It's rarely ever a team just takes a player from another team without some other moving part involved, but they have the roster spots now to find their thick jacked king and absorb him into the Derek Favors trade exception if he makes $7.6 million or less or whatever it is.
Ugh, I just love hearing other people say thick Jack King. It's so nice.
I do have to shout out with Weird Celtics Twitter because they were the ones who came up with that and I kind of just copy pasted it.
Whatever. We took it. It's fine. We stole it. I'm now. Fine being a thief. It's fine.
You just hat tipped them, so it's not even stealing now. You credit. Yeah.
Great artist steal.
Let's check around some of the other teams in the league and talk about them. First of all, one of our favorite teams to watch.
Coolest team in the league, bar none.
The Memphis Grizzlies are so much fun. Ja Morant honestly surprises me. I thought that he was going to get better, but I didn't think that he's just so much fun to watch. That's a fun
He's putting up 25, 6, and 7. Like, that's an awesome LeBron season.
I appreciate his half ponytail looks better than anyone else that has ever donned a half ponytail, including myself. I appreciate that he is not a thick Jack King. Our guy is scrawny as far as NBA players go, and he just is brutalizing dudes. The fact that he is breaking guys down in such regular fashion and as often, I love to watch it. We love to see it. Dan, what do you think about the Grizz?
I am like in year three or year four of just saying the Grizzlies aren't going to make the playoffs, and they're going to make the playoffs now. So I'm just woefully wrong on them all the time. He is like one of the three or five most electrifying players to watch. And I think what I like most about his game is its unpredictability, because it's like, you know, Russell Westbrook is trying to murder someone when he gets going downhill. But with Ja, it's like when he leaves his feet, is he putting up a floater? Is he trying to dunk? Is he going to pass? He's shooting so well from three now, even though it's not in high volume. So he's become like this every level threat. And I don't know what he's going to do. And it's just watching that. I love that unpredictability, that uncertainty as a viewer of not knowing what he's going to do. And I think even just like on defense to see him try, he's still really bad, but like he still tries. And to see the Grizzlies just defend, they're really ferocious on that end of the floor too. We've seen
they don't give up at all.
Like, no.
And at any point of the game, they are relentless.
Yeah. And it's just like these, like De'Anthony Melton, everyone knows how hard he plays. And like Tyus Jones will come in when Ja Morant was injured or he was out, and he's just mucking possessions up. That team is, you know, I'll be a romantic and be like, this team could do something in the playoffs. And the reality is, no, they can't. But they're not a team that you're gonna, they're like first team you don't want to face them in the first round of the playoffs or at all in the playoffs, because they'll make you feel a 6 or 7 game loss right now.
They remind me of where the Jazz were a couple years ago when the Jazz had Ricky Rubio and Jay Crowder, like that version of the Jazz that were like, everybody knew they weren't like a legitimate title contender, but going into the playoffs, you knew like you were going to absolutely get into a war with them. And like the way they play, it's like the way that Ricky Hatton used to box, where it was like, yeah, there are some flaws there and they can ultimately get knocked out. But like all 12 rounds, it's just going to be a brutal war. And like, they're so fun to watch. And like, I'm forever going to be bitter that the Jazz drafted Azubuike over Desmond Bane, because he's so good. And you mentioned De'Anthony Melton and Tyus Jones, and Triple J is starting to like, we're starting to see his potential actually like come to fruition. And like,
yeah, he can like actually defend without fouling
now. Yeah. And like, he's just that like prototypical new age big man who can step out and can, you know, guard all five positions, can shoot from three. The Jazz learned that at home. And yeah, they're awesome, and they're super fun to watch. And I don't know if there's a player I enjoy watching more in the league than Ja Morant.
I think Steph Curry still tops it for me, but sorry, Sarah.
He's up there.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me because if you look at that team, I think they're a little bit scarier than maybe the Jazz team that you were comparing them to, because like they beat Steph in the play-in last year. Like people are going to forget that like in the annals of history, but like they are a scary team, and like day by day they get scarier because Ja is that good. And it's such a weird conglomeration of players. The fact that like Dylan Brooks is like their big time diva is like that. That's what we're dealing with. We're like, Dylan Brooks is the guy wearing sunglasses indoors, you know, like it's such a weird thing. The fact that they're in Memphis, I feel like it fits everything so well. I like that they're like one of the only teams in the league that doesn't complain to the refs, all game long. That it makes it watching their games a lot better. And I talked to Triple J about that early in the season, and it's a point of pride. It's something they talked about, like, let's not be one of the teams that people will watch and then they're going to complain about us not getting back on D because we're talking to the refs. Let's talk to him during the timeouts. And it's like, why aren't all the teams doing this? And the Jazz could really take
Bogdanovich.
It's Rudy Gobert.
Pretty much every player on Dallas, maybe too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like every team has a problem with that. And just every year it pisses me off so much more. And so it's probably just proof and evidence that I'm becoming like an old man, like screaming, get off my lawn, that like every year I get more angry about people complaining to the refs. When has it worked? When has that ever done anything for anyone?
Except get them a technical. Yeah. I mean, I guess I'm assuming the thought process is, it makes the ref aware for next time. I really just think it's, aside from ego, I really do think there are players that do it as like, I was going to take this possession off on defense anyway, so I'm just going to super take it off. There's going to be a study about the active rest that players get by arguing with referees or something down the line.
Nate Silver is finally going to earn that paycheck.
Speaking of players that are taking plays off. No, I'm just joking. I want to get,
I didn't know we were talking about Julius Randle on this podcast, but here for it.
I want to get to I want to talk about the Bulls in a minute, but I do want to get to the Houston Rockets and talk about how the implosion of like Shams and Woj tweets that we got the other night.
That was fun.
What? Like that at halftime, there's such a horrible conversation in the locker room that people are throwing things at each other and then leaving the arena not to return for the second half. Like, didn't they already know that they were bad?
Maybe you don't expect to get criticism from the coaches if you're supposed to be bad. I don't.
Yeah.
That's such a bizarre story. Like, Kevin Porter Jr. has had his like issues dating back to Cleveland, of course, but like the Christian Wood, like his body language has been all over the place this year. Then he refuses to, he doesn't start because he broke a team rule. I don't even know if we know what that team rule was. And then he refuses to go back in the game, basically in the second half. It's weird. This team was on like one of the longest winning streaks in the league too, less than a month ago, whatever it was. They've been, somebody just free Eric Gordon, get my guy out of there, because that's just, it seems like a very toxic workplace for a veteran.
The toxic worst play. I like don't understand why they're so mad. Like, free Steven Silas, because that poor guy looked like he was going to cry during every media availability last season when everything was virtual. And it just made me sad to watch him have to talk about how bad things were all the time. And now he's like watching, this is what everything has become. Like, that poor guy has never gotten a chance to actually coach an NBA team. I feel bad for him.
Yeah. I just want to see Rockets games on Bravo.
Please. Please. Enough Rockets. They're bad. They know they're bad. And they're also mad about it, I guess. We've only got a few minutes left with Dan here, and I want to get his take on the Chicago Bulls. And like, legitimately, my question is, does DeMar DeRozan deserve to be in the MVP conversation? And if so, how high?
I think tangentially, like top five, for sure. I don't know how you put him ahead of a Steph or a Kevin Durant or even a Giannis right now, a Jokic especially. But the fact that he's there, I mean, this might be the best season of his career. And I think most people, especially myself, were just so wrong about these Bulls. Even as their defense has trailed off, they're a lot better defensively than I thought they were. And he's brought a steadiness to their offense in crunch time, just in general. I think it's helped Zach LaVine a ton. He's quietly been just like, they should probably both DeRozan and LaVine be all-star starters in the East. And I think the question with this team, aside from can they make a move for a wing of the deadline, is we've seen DeRozan struggle in the playoffs. Those have been fair criticisms. Mm-hmm. What happens when your offense is so tethered to his thriving? What happens when you enter the playoffs this year? Because Zach LaVine's great and they have other options, but like DeMar DeRozan got to play with Kyle Lowry too in Toronto. So I think those concerns are still there, but you talk about obliterating expectations. Chicago is just annihilating them at the moment.
I mean, there were times in San Antonio, I thought like, is this guy going to retire in the next couple of years? Cause he like, And it wasn't like because of a lack of talent. It just seemed like, you know, he didn't care all that much, you know, and granted, this is just the eye test, but like to see this resurgence, it's been fun. The Bulls are a fun team to watch. Like, I think Lonzo Ball has had a bit of a resurgence being there. You know, I'm blown away that the Lakers just gave away Alex Caruso, who's probably going to make a first team all defense this year. Like, he's been spectacular. And like, yeah, I still have questions about like Vooch and if they need another wing, but like, yeah, they're good. And I think I had them as like the seventh or eighth best team in the East this year. And it's going to be a big, healthy portion of crow I'm going to eat come playoff time.
Yeah, I had them. You had them seventh or eighth. I had them to play the play-in in the Eastern Conference.
I might have had them 11th, to be honest with you. Like, I was so far off on the Bulls.
I didn't see the DeRozan-Levine pairing working the way it was. I thought that they were kind of similar players and would, you know, I kind of felt like there was only one ball, and I've been super wrong about it.
I just thought they were going to, because DeRozan's having one of the best seasons of his career, but he's still been like a good offensive player for so long. I thought this defense was going to be atrocious.
Yeah.
And they've been like from the point of attack and just having Caruso, Javonte Green, who's injured now, Lonzo Ball, like they've been able to do a lot of stuff, even with DeRozan and Levine on the court at the same time and having Vooch on the floor too. I was just like, oh, they'll be a bottom five defensive team. And they've been hyper aggressive and really good at it.
Dan, we've got about 5 minutes left here. I think we'd probably be remiss if I didn't ask you from sort of a national perspective, what the view and the thoughts are on the Jazz right now.
I think we almost touched upon it when we were talking about that blockbuster Oni trade. Is there going to be another move that sort of elevates them to the same level as Phoenix, Milwaukee, and Golden State? And I will say they could do nothing though. And I don't think they should. I think they're at the point where it's like, find someone who could be the eighth or ninth guy, be a part of your closing lineup in important games. You are that good that you need to take that swing now. Realistically though, if they do nothing, to me, there are four or five teams that can win the championship right now. And they are among them. It's Brooklyn, Milwaukee, and then the three teams out west and Golden State, Phoenix, and Utah. Their offense is just thermonuclear. Donovan Mitchell's offensive game is, there are still, I guess you could quibble about some of his like passing decisions, but he's just like one of the most dangerous, well-rounded scorers in the league.
He's gotten so good. And like, he's elevated his game every single year. And he's done it again this season. Like, you're right in that he's not like a super dynamic playmaker, but he's a better playmaker than he was last season.
I think that
a better overall score.
I think that it's really helpful to hear some of these, like, you know, general praising ideas about the Jazz for Jazz fans, because I mean, after any win or loss on a nightly basis, they're like, Jordan Clarkson is terrible. Bojan Bogdanovic is terrible. Donovan Mitchell isn't even a star in this league. Like, what are we going to, like, it's the sky is falling every day. And so, you know, I think that they need to realize that, like, even on a national landscape, like, people are looking at them and they're like, even if they stand pat, like, they still could have a chance. And I don't think they're going to stand pat. So I think they're making the swing to try to actually run for a title this year.
And they, as they should, because they are, like, you have Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell now, like, you have two top 15 players now, whatever they are. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell, I think it's going to be between him and John Morant for that final starter spot in the West All-Star, but he'll be an All-Star no matter what, because he's been absolutely incredible. I hope they make that move. I'm curious what it will be. And I'm curious who they'll give up. I just wrote about this. It's really hard to, there's like all these different stances that it should be Ingles, but he's probably at the absolute bottom of his value given his contract expires. He's older. This season's been up and down. He's playing better for a minute. Wasn't playing better. So for recently after that, should it be Clarkson? Some people think he's like too important, and this is probably the wrong podcast to suggest that on, based off the bio, but should it be him just because they need someone who can defend? And that's just not what Clarkson does. And their offense is so good that I don't know that you need Clarkson. I've even, you know, you mentioned people being unhappy with Bojan Bogdanovic. Like, this dude is averaging over 17 on 62 plus true shooting. Let's not overthink this, but is he expendable to them? So there are a bunch of different things they could do. I hope though that they make the bigger swing at the deadline, whatever that entails.
Yeah. I said on the podcast before this one that it feels like the Jazz are kind of in that like 2004 Pistons mode before they got Rasheed Wallace. And like, they're missing that Rasheed Wallace kind of guy that just galvanizes and solidifies that roster and really fully makes them a title team. And both Sarah and I said, like, we don't necessarily know who that guy is. Is it a Marcus Smart? Is it Jeremy Grant? You know, I think Zach Lowe said, floated a deal of like Joe Ingles and picks for Harrison Barnes. And like, but it just seems like they're just one piece away, like somebody who can rebound, who can guard at the point of attack, who can just bring that element of defensive dynamism that they don't have. And if they can get him, then I think that, you know, they really are like a true blue contender. As they stand right now, I don't think they are. I think they have a puncher's chance, but I don't think it's a very good chance.
I think that's fair. I think they're like it could be even a player as good or a little bit worse than Josh Richardson. And I think that would come close, if not actually put them over the top. Like, that's how close they are.
Yeah.
Greg, you and I will continue the conversation. My Zoom is going to kick us off here, so that's why we have to stop. Dan, thank you so, so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Appreciate you coming on late also after the Joe Ingles COVID news broke. So where can people find you?
They can just follow all my nonsense on Twitter, at Dan Favalli, at F-A-V-A-L-E. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was a blast.
Yeah, thanks a lot. For everyone else, rate, review, subscribe, download. You know what to do. Do all of the things, and we will talk to you next time.